You can swear off French fries and live at the gym, but it won't get rid of certain stubborn pockets of fat. Those need to get iced with CoolSculpting. It's the newest non-surgical solution at the Plastic Surgery Clinic. CoolSculpting freezes fat cells in problem areas so your body can just flush them away forever. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and book your free consultation. CoolSculpting at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. It stops fat cells cold.
It's not just that Bob is brilliant. It also helps that everyone else isn't as smart. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Monday, February the 8th, 2016, Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Bob McCown, John Shannon in our Toronto studios. Shai Davidi will join us for a little baseball talk in a few minutes. But back to the Super Bowl for a moment. It was by consensus a less than stellar entertainment. And yet the television ratings was the second highest ever?
No, but it was in the top five for sure. It was the Peyton Manning story.
I don't know. I wonder whether this game is now story proof. You know what I mean?
We've now
reached the point it doesn't matter who's playing, doesn't matter if there's a storyline, doesn't matter whether it's supposed to be interesting. Maybe I'm underselling the Peyton Manning story. I don't think I would have watched just for Peyton Manning. Maybe I'm underselling the Cam Newton story. I get that he looked like an exciting guy, but to get those numbers, I'm really quite surprised. I thought this would be one of the lower rated Super Bowls going in, and nothing that happened during the game would suggest to me that people would keep their eyeballs on the TV. But what do I know? Here's our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Are you at all surprised that this has taken place, Mr. Ryan?
I'm surprised at your surprise.
Really? See?
We've reached that point, as you alluded to, where it doesn't matter. It is holiday. It's a ritual. It's an American, at least American. I cannot speak for what happens above the border.
Huge number here, too, Jim.
But I can tell you that it so far transcends rational thought with regard to the actual entertainment value that any sporting event can provide. It doesn't matter. It is a thing you do. People get together. It is the second only to Thanksgiving, I think, in terms of liquor store sales and catering and all that stuff. I have long ago said that the definition of a loser is someone who watches the Super Bowl alone. I mean, it just isn't done down here. And so then you throw in, yes, in fact, Peyton Manning is an inducement. Yes, in fact, this year Cam Newton had risen to the point of celebrity where people wanted to see if it could play out and whether he could do it again one more time. It turns out he couldn't. Absolutely, you shouldn't be surprised. And even with all the negative things that have come up about football in the last couple of years, from concussions to, you know, if you think PED is a problem or whatever it is, Deflategate and your boy, doesn't matter. The game remains impervious to criticism.
It was a huge number here, too, Bob, just so you know.
Well, I'm not surprised then. And so that's it. And the Manning thing was big. There's no doubt. And Manning versus Newton had an allure. And I mean, you know, so, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Well, I was. I can still be surprised.
You asked, I answered.
Yeah.
Well, no, I understand. And I mean,
and we're having a friendly discussion.
Well, I assume it's friendly, at least for the moment. You know, we could put the gloves on or take the gloves off, as the case may be, a little bit later on. Were you entertained by what you saw?
Not really. I was not. It didn't push in. I was not. There's no buzz. It wasn't entertaining. I saw better, more entertaining athletic events in the course of the week. However, from the beginning, it was not I had no emotional attachment in the game, only intellectual. And it was one issue and one issue only for me. And it wasn't the fate of Manning. It was, can Wade Phillips and his tremendous defense stop Cam? Can they do unto Cam as no one had done? Can they do to Cam what they did to Brady? I wanted to see if that could possibly happen. And the answer, and Cam and Cam's line, and the answer is, yes, they can. They and so we now have an incomplete, lopsided NFL champion for, the, I think, the third time in this century, following the Ravens and the Buccaneers, in which a team totally based on defense with only a minimal contribution from its mediocre offense is now the champion. And that, to me, will frustrate people in this league who will say, oh, we're better than them. How do we let this happen? And it can defense prevail to that extent? Should it? And, well, whether it should or not, it did. They earned it. Can't take it away from them. That was always my interest in the start. Could they stop Newton? And they did.
Speaking of Wade Phillips, did you see his tweet today, Bob?
Oh, I didn't see today's. What did son of bum have to say today?
A little dab with you do, but too much dab will undo you.
Who knew that dour, you know, boring, lousy head coach Wade was such a closet wit?
And it was retweeted almost 10,000 times.
So. Oh, yeah, but this is the great revelation of the year, is that Wade Phillips has a sense of humor and a little pizzazz and who knew?
I didn't know. Easy to have a sense of humor when you win.
Well, but he did win, and did he make the most of what he had to work with? Mm. Oh boy, did he! What coach in any American or North American sport? What coach has done, head coach or otherwise, has maximized his talent potential to the degree that Wade Phillips did? You know, but he'd make the most of what he had to work with. Absolutely.
With Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe now. What we know is, or maybe I shouldn't say that anymore because you keep disagreeing with me, but I believe what we know is that we live in a monkey see, monkey do society in sport. If you find a way to win with something, everybody else will say, ah, that's how you do it. We're going to do that same thing. It has happened with the Kansas City Royals and their bullpen, and everybody now has to have a strong three or four guys at the ass end of their bullpen. Now we have a team that, in spite of the fact that the NFL has sort of morphed into this passing league, more offense, higher scoring, now we have a team that is almost 100% about defense who wins the Super Bowl. Is this the next wave?
That's always, you're right. We live in a derivative society, and I don't care if it's sports or entertainment or politics or whatever. Okay, but it is, we're talking about sport. I can go back as far as 1975 when the Golden State Warriors won with Rick Barry and the 11 Dwarfs, and 11 happy to be there acolyte players. And at that time, I assure you, people thought, well, maybe that's the way to go in the NFL, find a superstar and surround it with a bunch of happy, decent players. Well, you know what the problem with that was? There was only one Rick Barry.
Right.
And here's the problem with all this stuff in this case. Yeah, good luck. You know, Von Miller was the second pick in the draft. Von Miller is a great talent. He was identified as a great talent a long time ago. There's only one Von Miller, or maybe there are only a couple of Von Millers. So you start with a Von Miller, and then you surround, and then you bring in a DeMarcus Ware, who came apparently from what we read to the Broncos because he thought that was a chance to win, and he was impressed by the fact that Manning was the quarterback. I mean, they have talent. They have guys and linebackers and a defensive backfield, no question. You got to have talent too. So you got to find that talent. I think more often than not, these teams are still the outliers. I still think that these lopsided teams, and no offensive, totally offensive team that couldn't stop anybody wins in any sport. And I don't care if it's baseball, basketball, football. I don't know, and I think hockey too. You'd have to be the authority on that. Ordinarily, you still need some kind of balance, better balance than this team had. But, you know, I was wrong 100% all year. Remember when they had a cluster of teams at 6-0? Mm-hmm. There were like five or six teams at 6-0. Well, I grandiosely proclaimed that the one team I'm telling you isn't going to win with the Denver Broncos. Why? Because they're too lopsided. They don't have enough offense. And then as the season progressed and when the playoffs started, I grandiosely proclaimed that there's one team I'm not worried about. I mean this. I said it. It was the Denver Broncos. Right down to the game, I certainly thought the Panthers would win this game by 7 to 10 points, that the Broncos could not do it to the Panthers as they did. But guess what? That's why we play the game. They did. I salute them.
All right, so let's talk about some of the things that happened during this game and why this game was, I mean, it wasn't really one-sided, but wound up being a comfortable victory for Denver, at least in terms of points. Reason number one, perhaps, Cam Newton's unwillingness through the game plan, perhaps, to get outside. We opined earlier that although he is principally a pocket passer, he clearly has physical abilities beyond just standing there and throwing the football. When you have two outstanding defensive rush ends like Denver has, why didn't they roll out more with Cam Newton?
Probably a very good question. I think these postmortems will surface as the week goes on, much as they did post the AFC Championship game, when as maybe second, third, fourth day, new theories arose. And the one that resonated after the last game was snap count. When Matt Light, a former Patriot tackle and possessor of Super Bowl rings, really made quite the issue out of the idea that he couldn't believe that the Patriots did not alter the snap count. And I suspect there will be some postmortems along the lines that you suggest about play calling and the nature of how they went about it. And once again, we will say that this will, and then we will say, well, this is a Wade Phillips out. Foxed his offensive coordinator counterpart, by the way, whose name I do not know. Who is the offensive coordinator?
Mike Shula.
Oh, it's Mike Shula, right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. They did show Mike Shula on camera. You're right. Mike Shula. Hey, Wade Fox won. Mike Shula nothing in that regard. That's a very good point you make. I can't argue with that. I'm sure there are going to be other things that people will surface that maybe they could have tried and could have done. But then again, but maybe we'll find out that they just were beaten man-to-man. What did they do to stop Greg Olsen? Nobody else has stopped him too much this year. They did something. And and then we come down to individual personnel. They have tremendous individual talent on their defensive side of the football.
Item number two, which didn't... it ultimately sealed the game for Denver. But it wasn't a philosophy. It was a single play, a single event that I believe will haunt Cam Newton for his entire life. It will be replayed, it will be remembered, it will be talked about, he'll be criticized and questioned for it. And that is the fumble late in the ball game when the Broncos are only up by six and a touchdown could win it for Carolina. And Newton gets hit, fumbles the football, goes to go after it, and then at the last second pulls up. Is that going to be part of his legacy? And what was he thinking?
At least until he wins one, and even then they'll say, well, there's another one. But if he wins one, I think we will say, look, we have to take a deep breath and say what it meant. What it meant was, even if he recovered it, their chances of winning were minimal. However, by them not recovering that football, their chances were gone. That game was effectively 99.9% over when that ball changed hands. There is no question about that. And he will have to answer. And he didn't choose to answer for it. As we know, his post-game petulance is going to be part of his package now heading into next year. He undid with both that. If he had just had a bad day and they beat him up and he went up and fessed up and gave him credit and acted responsibly, fine. But he's going to have to answer for that post-game behavior too. But the two things put together, oh boy, oh no, you're so right. He undid any good he may have accomplished in terms of having his image in a positive way by the combination of that play and then his post-game no-show, effective no-show and petulance.
Well, actually,
you're right. He's going to have to live with this. And of course, what I dread is, is this going to lead us to more race discussion, for the wrong reasons, you know? There's always a good reason, and there will always be a reason for a good race discussion, but will it lead? I hope we don't have this lead to that, whatever.
Well, there are individuals that are going to be inclined to make race an issue on this.
Right, always. So
it's inevitable.
Yeah, but to answer your question, absolutely. This is... And I can't think of a comparable, but different, you know, signature plays and things in the history of sports. But boy, this is a special one of a nature and in a macho sport and a big, strong, tough guy, and you know, the big mouth and the whole thing, and then to shrink at that moment. You know, the only recent comparable thing, and it wasn't a physical thing, this was more of a mental thing, was LeBron James, you know, against the, you know, he quit against the, he did quit against the Celtics in the playoffs that series, and he did, and then he ran away from the ball against the Mavericks,
right.
And I think he's kind of erased some of that bad negative image by finally winning a championship. It's going to take a minimum of winning one championship, minimum, for Cam to even begin to dig himself out of this hole.
I agree.
Let's talk about the post game. You will have been through scrums at major sporting events in your life. He's on the podium. As somebody who has written for many years for one of the great papers in North America, what would your expectation be? And what have you witnessed of other athletes that are supposed to be at this level and how long they stay?
Well, I would set the bar fairly low based on how I had perceived him coming in and the youth factor, and he's still young and never been in this kind of humiliating position, because he was, if this wasn't the worst day of his career, certainly it was because of the import of the contest. I can't imagine that even in an inconsequential exhibition game had he ever looked worse or been beaten up more or been reduced to ordinary stature as he was in this game. It was hard for him to take. So I wouldn't have expected a whole lot. I would have hoped for a minimum amount of professionalism and living up to, he created a circumstance due to his bravado and all this stuff, live up to be a professional, and he didn't even, you know, come close. I mean, he failed miserably. He got an F.
Exactly the grade I gave him.
Yeah, he got an F. I mean, the only thing would have been better for a no-show. A no-show would have been better than that.
Yeah.
That would have been a D minus, but an F, he got an F. And it's just so totally immature and unprofessional for him to do what he did. You know, in contrast to the class displayed by a man who I've come to like a lot from afar, never met him, is Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera displayed the requisite class on his end, but what Cam did was fulfill all the worst fears of, you know, or fulfill all the worst images, and it was terrible. It's awful.
What do you think it does to the 40-odd, 50-odd guys that are his teammates? And I mean, on one hand, here's a guy who clearly led this team to a 15-1 record and got them to the Super Bowl. He didn't do it single-handedly. Nobody in football is capable of doing that. But he was a valuable, valuable contributor, maybe the single most valuable contributor to the success of this team. And then not just the performance on the field, but the play late in the game where he doesn't go for the fumble, then the pout when he gets hit in the end zone after throwing the ball away, and then the reaction in the post game. What does that do? And this is a quarterback. This is a leader. This is a guy you're listening to. This is the guy, only guy who's supposed to talk in that huddle. What does it do to those other guys?
Well, Bob, with them, and as the world's evolved and the nature of how people, these guys come into the game in football and basketball, and particularly those two sports in which they go through a certain process, unlike baseball, which is all out of the off the radar until they pop up for us in the big leagues. Unlike that, it's different. Unlike that, the standards are different and they're lower. And I think it was just a matter of the post game and the refusal to act as a leader and be responsible. I don't think it matters too much to them. But who knows what respect he lost by not going for that football. I don't know. You'd like to think that they will hold him highly accountable, confront him directly, ask questions, get answers that we weren't able to get yesterday. They deserve an answer far more than we do. We'd like an answer. We're curious about an answer. But we don't, you know, merit or deserve an answer as much as we like in the media like to think with it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and I mean,
they deserve an answer. They, in this sport, the two sports, the two macho sports, football and hockey, there's a standard of a body sacrifice that is expected by all, and they deserve an answer. And I don't know, you know, I hope they get one, because those guys deserve better than that. And we don't know. I mean, if he apologizes in front of them all, great. If we ever find that out, fine. But That's the influence. It's not the other thing. Yeah, they don't care whether we show talk to the press or not. That's
no, I understand that. I would suspect
they're not going for the football.
I would suspect the vast majority of the players on the sidelines or on the field didn't know at the time what had taken place, and will only see it on the replay. And it was
now.
Yeah, it's clear now.
Positively, but that funny because. You know, we were celebrating Super Bowl 50 yesterday, fine. And in Super Bowl 1, you know, it might have passed as a minor footnote if anybody even noticed, and there would be no replay, and it would have been, you know, he could have slid maybe, but you know, obviously in this day and age, it's not possible.
Just with that in mind, Bob, you did remember Super Bowl 1, as I do.
Yeah.
What was it like to see those MVPs walk out?
Here's my thought. Everyone comes out, and I'm watching in the majority, and I'm going, he's not moving very well, is he?
No.
And it wasn't just guys in their 70s, like the guys that would be from the first one. Even Elway wasn't moving very well. Montana already told us this week at 59 that he can't do much more than play a little golf, and he doesn't have movement and feeling, good feeling and all that. No, playing into the narrative that we had of the concussion thing and the body debilitation thing and the Giants story in the New York Times yesterday playing off Len Dawson, who apparently is very cognitively fine and physically pretty good at 80 versus Willie Wood, who doesn't even know he played in the first game and so forth. But my thought was, oh boy, he's not moving very well. Mm-hmm. It is a debilitating game. I mean, it is. It's our game of choice. People like me. I'm a self-confessed enabler. I watch it. I follow it. I comment on it. I've known it my whole life. If I had real conviction, I'd walk away and not watch it. But I'm not ready to do that. But it's a brutal, vicious. Truly vicious, debilitating game. And what does it say about the society that this is the game of choice?
I wish I had the answer to that. Last question on the Super Bowl before we move on. What did you make of the abandonment of the Roman numeral in the Super Bowl?
A complete joke, because they all worry was that L would stand for loser. Come on. I mean, come on. Next year, are we going to go back to LI next year? I guess we are. The pretentiousness of the league to worry about this and to think that it amuses me. But I'm often amused by the pretentious, what I call the pretentiousness of the NFL. But that from day one amused me greatly. I thought it was ridiculous.
Hear, hear to that. Still with football, Marshawn Lynch has announced he is indeed retiring. Is he 30 years old, I think?
Played 9 years, Bob. So
yeah.
Be close to
30. Same number of years as Jim Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. He's 29. Well, is the time right? And maybe more significantly, we've seen a smattering of this, but I wonder if the days of, if guys are going to start saying, you know, I'm going to get the money. I'm going to try and get out of here while I still have all my faculties. This concussion thing is real, and I'm not going to stay too long.
We'll wait to hear from him if we do. We may not with him, no one knows, and give the reason. I can't speak, about what his motivation might be. I honestly don't know. I applaud it if he's got a rational sense about saving himself and preventing, anything he thinks is likely to happen if it hasn't happened already. But let's talk about Calvin Johnson, because in this case, we do know that he has documented ongoing injury issues, ankle issues, injuries, number one, and he's been beaten up. And we don't know for a fact that he's never said anything that he worries about his cognitive situation down the road, but he seems to be a thoughtful guy, and perhaps I don't even want to take a chance on it happening. And Lynch, for all, we've been told that Lynch is more to Lynch than we saw. You know, there's a Lynch that we don't know. He just chose to play this role last year and play this general role, but there's a reasonably intelligent person, actually, that we don't see. I'd like to think there is. I think that we're going to see more of this. I think that we had Chris Borland quit early on.
Yep.
I think it's Chris's first name. I know it's Borland. And we're going to have more of this. As guys are, as you suggest, are going to say, enough's enough. I've made enough money, but I see what's going on. I'm paying attention to what they're telling me. There is no There's no excuse anyone has for choosing to play the game. Now, that you don't know, you know. And if you don't know, there are people who will tell you. You have to go into this with your eyes open to understand. You're going to choose to play this game. You're running the risk of serious physical problems, be they below or above the neck. More important that they're worrisome that they're above the neck. But if you want to live a life of pain and restriction and when you're in your 40s and 50s and or don't you? Do you want to worry about cognitive impairment as early as your early 50s, or don't you? You have the information's there, and I think enough of these guys are intelligent enough to understand that. But a lot of them, you know, this is. Wouldn't it be great, guys? Wouldn't it be great if this led to guys staying in school, getting an education, getting prepared for a real life? Ha! You know, instead of going out after 3 years and no degrees and never going back and having no preparation for a life after football and going through the money as they do and all the you know, wouldn't it be great if it led to a better preparedness for these guys on the part of, but you know, I think do we really think that's going to happen?
No.
Well, the other thing with Lynch is Lynch as a running back, let's face it, is there a more vicious position on the football field than playing running back?
Well, the shelf life is short. He's already, you know, exceeded.
Right.
Yeah, for most of them, you're right. It's a very true. You're actually right. But that's the game. You know, I keep saying, the mothers of America could shut football down tomorrow. The mothers of North America, I should say, could shut football down tomorrow. And within five, six, 7 years, would have the town supply shut off, and that'd be the end of the game. You know, and this amazing, gigantic enterprise of everything, of betting and of endorsements and everything else. And oh my God, you know, and you know, so it's interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see what the future of the sport is in 15, 20 years.
That's so we can present a trophy to an owner who didn't play. It's one of my pet peeves of this one.
Yeah.
Present it to the players, please. Present it to the players.
Yeah.
We played the game.
Yeah.
Yep. But that's right. Well, at least had they done it to the Panthers, they would have done both, you know, with Jerry Richardson. But
former player.
The one and only exception to the rule that we know of. It's an interesting dialogue, and it goes on, and you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's just such a contradiction. The sport is at its all-time peak of popularity, and at the same time, it's its all-time peak of vulnerability. Isn't that interesting?
It is. Last one, quickly, before we let you go. Derek Fisher gone, fired by the Knicks. They bring in Kurt Rambis, a former Laker, but he wasn't there when Jackson was there, was he?
He's a failed coach before.
Oh, he was.
He didn't seem to have it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, and there have been guys that have had a second chance and succeeded. He didn't seem to have it. I firmly believe that the only person who would satisfy Phil Jackson teaching the triangle was Phil Jackson. the Knicks, right now their biggest problem is Melo, who actually had kind of reinvented himself pretty nicely, is hurt. They got a real problem. You know, they need him. They haven't won a game, in which he didn't play, from what I read. But Derek didn't have it. You thought he might. I mean, I would have. If you told me like 5, 6, 7 years ago, he was an impressive guy.
I agree.
Guy to deal with. I did have an opportunity to cover and interview him and be impressed with his. It was the whole thing, whole package. But he wasn't ready. You know, he wasn't ready to coach, and the coach, and not. And New York is New York. It's a very, very tough environment. But I doubt seriously that Rambis will be the long time solution.
No, I don't think so. No. I don't know who is, whether it's Thibodeau or somebody else. But
Thibodeau isn't a triangle guy. If Phil will go off that, Thibodeau would be the most logical guy to go in there. I mean, he can coach, and that would be interesting. And I do like him, so I'm rooting for him. But to do that, yeah.
Maybe Phil has realized this is a little more difficult than he first thought.
Yeah, well, I think Phil went back with partly on a romantic notion. He always harbored a great affinity for the Knicks, and he wanted to emulate his great mentor, who was Red Holtzman, and 12 million other reasons. There were reasons for him to go to New York, you know.
Yeah, that's the number.
There were 12 million other reasons, which is just...
He doesn't need the money.
Hard to die.
He doesn't need the money.
How many need the money?
Nobody needs it.
How many of them need these guys?
None.
You know, I know. It's just... It's It's like, that's why Peyton, please, you know, if this isn't the perfect opportunity, don't be coy. Just get out.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Ryan, enjoy your week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Do you think there's any chance? There's no chance.
What?
Peyton Manning's going to
play another
year.
Oh, he's done. He's done.
It's just the perfect time.
But you don't, but in what Peyton became was a true member of the Broncos. If he had announced his retirement, the whole storyline of the night moves off the Broncos and goes completely to him.
Well, that was like the second question or the first question that was asked him after the game.
And he's smart enough to know that winning the Super Bowl was for the team. Now, you know, a month from now, you can have the press conference and Peyton can announce his retirement and have it sponsored by Papa John's and Budweiser.
Pound that Budweiser, yeah. As they used to say with the Seattle Pilots. We'll take the break when we come back.
Seattle Pilots, good for you, Bob.
Shai Davidi will join us. Baseball reference, you see? When Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour. So we have this sign. Well, we have more than one sign. We have numerous signs around this building. And every once in a while, these are electronic signs. It's a countdown clock.
You should tweet it out, Bob.
I don't tweet.
You do so.
I haven't tweeted in ages. And I would have to take a photograph, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll tweet it out.
I don't have a camera.
I'll tweet it out. Then you can retweet it.
So we have these things that hang at various entrances in the building, and they change it depending on what's coming up. So today, you know what the sign says?
It's how many days to the first opening day for the Jays.
Home opener.
Yeah.
60 days today.
Okay, there you go.
60 days
to the
home opener.
And I didn't even see the sign. It was just a lucky guess. 60 days, that feels like forever.
Well, it's only like a few days to spring training starts.
I know.
But it's not 60 days to the start of the season. It's 60 days to the home opener.
60 days. I'll tweet it out so people can see it.
Thank you, John.
Then you can retweet it, Bob.
Can we go home now? Because that's really all I wanted to discuss.
Okay, that's good. So, we have 20 minutes to go, though.
Honest to God. Here's Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. Did you know it was 60, Davidi?
I didn't, but all that tells me is that there's a whole lot of spring training between that and the season. So.
Yeah, lucky you. You'll be there for almost all of it, won't you?
A lot of it, but you know, I'm one of the spring training is way too long kind of guys. I think they could cut it in half and it'd be perfect. You know, it drags on too long. I understand it's really important for the economic communities in Florida and Arizona there, but you know, let's cut it in half and get the season started.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that assessment, but I mean, are you talking about the number of games that are being played or the length of time the guys use to get ready for the season?
It's everything. It's the whole 6-week process of being down there for spring training. I think, you know, a lot of it is done to give pitchers the super gradual buildup. But,
right.
You know, hitters would be happy, more than happy, if it was cut in half. I think a lot of pitchers would probably be happy if it was cut in half, too. And the way guys work out on their own these days, I don't know that there's a need for it. I think it's there's this romance to spring training, and it's great. And there's a lot of value to that and the historic aspect. But, you know, I think that we can truncate this and move along the process a lot quicker and more efficiently.
One of the interesting things that has happened since last we chatted is the hiring of Eric Wedge as a player development advisor. He's a former manager in the Cleveland system. And, of course, immediately I get a phone call saying, is Gibby looking over his shoulder? And I don't think that has anything to do with this hiring, do you?
No, I don't think he's the manager in waiting. You know, it's I think unless this season goes incredibly awry and completely the wrong way, that John Gibbons is going to manage his team through the season. And I'm not sure that Eric Wedge would necessarily be the number one choice as a replacement. Now, I've spoken to a lot of people who think, if the guy's there, he's just he's there in case you need to fire the guy. But I'm not sure that he's necessarily the first choice as a manager. I know he's got the managerial experience, and you know, him being in place raises that. But you know, Eric Wedge has a long relationship with Mark Shapiro. He has a lot of benefits that he could bring to the player development side. I don't know that this is necessarily one of those moves that is just putting another body in place. This is somebody that was from the previous regime that they have ties with, that they wanted in the front office, and you can understand that. And I think that there might be some other, if they were to look for another manager, I don't know that they'd want to necessarily limit themselves to just one guy.
And I agree with you 100%.
So player development's enough for Wedge to do?
Yeah, I mean, he can certainly influence it in that way, and he can have an impact on a number of different guys. But, you know, it's not like there were other managerial jobs that were out there waiting for him, right? So he certainly.
If you want to stay in baseball, you got to find something to do.
Right. He's got a chance to influence the team, work with people that he's got longstanding relationships with. You know, this is what we commonly see, right? So if something went terribly wrong with the season and they needed an emergency manager and they couldn't find somebody, you know, they didn't have any other candidates, well, they do have someone in-house now that's got previous managerial experience, and that helps. But, you know, I'm just not so certain about this John Gibbons is set up to be fired narrative. You know, what we've seen
from
Shapiro so far is stability and keeping people in place. And I don't see why that, you know, John Gibbons is going to be the guy. He's going to be first to push out the door.
Well, the other thing, too, is if Shapiro was unclear as to Gibbons' position within the community, he found out last week.
Yeah.
Because Gibby got a standing ovation, correct?
Right, and a hearty one. And, you know, even John Gibbons was taken aback.
I know. Yeah, last year I was a bum.
Like, wow, what a difference a year makes.
Yeah, no kidding.
And it's funny because, you know, John Gibbons has been like the you know, the target for so many people. And, you know, as soon as the first sign of dissatisfaction or something that's wrong, it's right away point, fire Gibby, fire Gibby, fire Gibby. But, you know, he showed last year that he can handle a team. And, you know, I know that there's ongoing debate over how the last few games of the season were handled, whether it cost the Blue Jays home field advantage or not. I think that narrative is nonsense too, but you know, clearly he did, when given the pieces, he pushed all the right buttons, and he deserves credit for that. And all the people who are continually throwing arrows at the guy at some point need to give him some laurels too, you know?
By the way, the fire Gibby stuff could start 60 days from now too. That's part
really
of the job,
strong,
right?
John.
That's,
you know,
no, that's I, part of the job, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was going strong during the ALCS. You know, I think, you know, John Gibbons is forever going to be a target for some people because he doesn't, you know, he's not a smooth talker like Joe Maddon, and you know, some of the other managers, Terry Francona, Joe Girardi, that type. But you know, he's got an AL East title on his resume now.
Well, yeah,
take it away from him.
He's a good old boy baseball guy, yeah. And that's what he is. And
stupid like a fox.
Yeah, I'm a fan. So I want to get to 5 minutes left here. I want to get to some issues that have been going on. First, the Donaldson thing. It is clear the Blue Jays would like to sign an extension with Donaldson. They'll take out his 3 years of arbitration. Would probably like to get another couple or 3 years on the back of that. So you're looking at probably a 6-year deal. They've already said the 5-year limit is a dinosaur. It's history. What do you think the chances are?
I don't think that it's going to, at this point, I don't think they have enough time to get a multi-year deal done, like a six-year deal done. I think the best case scenario is that they get a 2 or 3 year extension done, either buying out 2 or 3 of his ARB years. It's a short time frame. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to pull off the mega extension. I'm not sure that 6 is enough to sign to entice Josh Donaldson to give up free agency, right? So my guess is it's going to be either 2 or 3 years, and they almost have to get something done, right? You can't take them. You can't take him to arbitration over $450,000.
No,
it just doesn't make sense.
No, it's stupid.
And I would think that there's probably also some I don't know about pressure, but maybe gentle nudging from both the Major League Baseball and the Players Association, saying, you know what, we don't want to waste resources on this case when neither of you guys really has an appetite for to have this hearing. So figure out a deal that goes beyond this.
Other situation, there is a report today that the Blue Jays are trying to sign both Bautista and Encarnacion. I don't buy that for a second. I'm not sure they've decided which of the two they would rather sign. I think it's Bautista, but I'm not positive of that. But between those two and Donaldson, those are your three guys that you're trying to address right now. And I don't think the Blue Jays can budgetarily commit to more than two of the three. Do you?
No, I don't even know if they can commit to two of the three if they don't get a payroll hike. Because, you know, if you just look at the numbers, they've got $67.5 million committed to four guys for next year. Donaldson, if he has another similar type year, you know, or a decent year, is probably going to be in the $17 million range. So that's pushing you to 93 for five guys. And you've got, including Bautista and Encarnacion, 9 free agents. So that's a whole lot of holes to fill without a lot of internal options to plug those holes. So if you think you're going to keep those guys and then still be able to fill in a suitable roster around them to compete, that's going to be a pretty tough task.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the payroll where it is.
Right, with the payroll where it is in the 140 range. So, you know, if you're not raising the payroll, I'm not sure it's a wise idea to bring those guys back, because it's obviously not quite the same. But, you know, you think back to Carlos Delgado when he was here at the beginning of the century, and, you know, his salary was taking up about 40% of the payroll, and they could never put a decent team around him. It's just a waste. So, you know, if you're the Blue Jays front office, you've got to think, well, where's my number going in 2017, and that they might not have a firm idea of that until
probably,
you know, June or July, when they know what kind of season they've had this year, and that by then it might be too late to extend the guys before they hit the open market.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty complicated situation right now.
Davidi, we'd love to chat more, but we're out of time. We'll enjoy your trip to Florida, and we'll talk when you get there.
All right, anytime, guys.
Thanks, pal. Shai Davidi,
SPF 50. He needs the 50.
For
the sun, you know, SPF 50 for
just
the sun.
Pile the oil on, go for it.
Deep fried Shy.
Apparently people are asking how they can attend the Jim Kelly event.
Yeah.
An evening with Jim Kelly in Toronto, March 23rd, in support of Hunter's
at
Hope
Steam
Foundation.
Whistle. At Steam Whistle.
At Steam Whistle. Jim indicated that most or all of the tickets may already be gone. However, you can go to the website www.firstand12.com. That's first and 12, spell it out, .com. And you can find out if there are still tickets available for that event. It's on the 23rd of March.
Is Deitch on tomorrow?
Do we know? Is Richard Deitch joining us tomorrow?
So we can get the critique of the Super Bowl from the guy who watched it alone?
Yeah. Well, you usually do, but chose not to.
The guys were going to be alone. The guys were going to be alone. I felt bad.
Well, what if I'd said I'm going to be alone?
I would have come over.
You would not.
I would have invited you to watch.
You've never. When is the last time you invited somebody over to your place?
That's a good point.
It's like never.
Never.
Yeah. Richard Deitch will join us tomorrow, apparently. Our thanks to Shai Davidi and Bob Ryan for joining us today. Hope your Super Bowl hangover is subsided. Enjoy your evening tonight. We have hockey on tonight.
Pittsburgh, Anaheim, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet.
Yeah, that's a dandy.
It's a good game.
Enjoy it. We'll see you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.